Wenn wir ziehen, darf Mem Dalet, Amud Aleph und Amud Bet. Valuing people for who they are. Chashiv v'charif. We're having an introduction to Perek HaZahav today, the fourth Perek of Bav Metzia. And Perek HaZahav deals with commerce, it deals with trade. And in the dealing with trade, one of the important things we've got to understand is the nature of money. What is currency? What is cash? What is money? And how is it used? What has that got to do with the title of the shiur? We'll see. Firstly, the idea of trade we have in the Torah, in the Chumash itself, the chitim kuru memkar la amitecha or kano miyad amitecha. If a person sells an item to his friend or buys from his friend, al tonu yishet achiv, you've got to be very careful when it comes to commerce and trade, the Torah warns us. You've got to be careful because it's very easy to exploit people. And there's an issa d'oraisa to exploit. So just as when you eating things, you're careful that they're kosher. You worry, is it proper kosher? And what's the hechsher? And is it glat? Is it this? When we're doing trade, one has to be equally careful of the treifus. And the treifus is that which contaminates a trade is ona'ah, is exploiting another person. Rashi points out, and Rashi considers it's important enough to point out that there's a drosha on this posuk that trade with people you know and trust. V'chitim kuru mimkar la'amitecha. When you're trading, trade with your amit, with your friend, trade with people you know, trade with people you're familiar, because there's always a danger of being exploited. So as far as you can, trade with people you know and you trust. Or kano miyad, amitecha. So we know the principle of trade. We know also that there's such a thing as a kinyan kesef. We learn that in Sefer Yirmiyahu, sadot ba kesef yiknu, that when one can acquire a field in that case, with the kinyan of kesef, that means the moment money passes hands, the deal is sealed, and neither can retract, neither can move away from it. So that's part of ona'ah. You've got to know at what point is your deal binding, and if you want to retract. So, for example, you make a sale, the market goes sky high. You want to back out of the scale, of course, the sale. You're going to do everything you can to back out of the sale. But at what point would that be ona'ah, and what point would it just be not standing by your word? There's a difference. Ona'ah is an issa d'oraisa. You're exploiting somebody. You made a deal. At what point are you considered having made a deal? So with property, when you hand over money, when the money is received, even though the property is in another part of the world, the buyer hasn't seen the property, but he's handed over the money for the property, the deal is done. We know the principle of chalipin, which is that I can sell you something in New York, even though we're standing in Yerushalayim, if we're bartering. So there's barter and there's trade with cash. If I trade with cash, if it's property, the transfer of the cash clinches the deal. If we're bartering two things, I'm giving you my gold Rolex here and you're giving me your motor car in New York, the moment one of us does a kinyan on one of the two items, the deal is binding on both items. The exchange, the barter has to take place. So we know that from Megillas Rut. And the Gemara, a little bit further on, says Dvar Torah me'ot ma'ot konot, when it comes to metaltelin, when it comes to movable property like the gold Rolex, it works the same as fixed property, midoraisa. That means that the moment the money is given, the deal is done. But the Chachomim, for various reasons, which we've discussed once and we'll discuss again on Daf Mem Zayin, decided that for movable property, money is not sufficient of a kinyan. You actually have to hold the thing in your hand. You've actually got to lift it up or move the object itself. You've got to handle the object. It's not good enough just to transfer the money. And the Nuiki Yosef there further on learns that that's love mikroyel. If that kesef works for metaltelin, that cash is theoretically midoraisa, is a valid kinyan for movable objects, that we learn misvora. We learn that logically. Because that's how trade is done. You don't always physically handle. There are markets all the time, and you pass money, you pay. Once payment is made, it's understood in the world that the kinyan is done. And the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef says that's enough reason to assume that even midoraisa, even according to the laws of the Torah, kesef works for movable property. However, the Chachomim decided that shouldn't be the case. So now we have a situation where, if we're bartering two objects, moving the one object, handling the one object, is sufficient to clinch the deal on both objects. However, if we're using cash to purchase an object, so I'm paying you $5,000 for your gold Rolex, then merely receiving the $5,000 does not clinch the deal. If you then find a buyer twice the price and you want to get out of it, technically you can. It's not a nice thing to do. It's not an ethical thing to do. But the deal is not clinched and you can back out of the deal. I would have no claim. Until I've actually lifted up the gold Rolex myself, I've done a Kenyan Hagbo, I've lifted up the watch myself, then it's a valid Kenyan. What happens if it's not a gold Rolex? What happens if it's a bar of gold that I'm buying from you? So now it's gold for money, gold for cash, or gold for silver. That's what our Perek opens up discussing on as a means of exploring the very essence of money, of cash. And the Mishnah opens up and says, Hazahav koneet ha-kesef ha-kesef eino koneet ha-zahav. The bar of gold, if you, I'm buying the bar of gold from you for $1,000, $2,000, the moment I pick up the bar of gold, the deal is done and I have to pay the $2,000. If you pick up the $2,000, the deal is not yet done. You've got to actually pick up the gold. So the gold is, although it's a commodity, it's just a bar of gold, it's being treated like the gold Rolex. It's the object that has to be lifted up itself. Interestingly enough, in the Yerushalmi, the Mishnah is brought differently the other way around. It's very unusual, but it is so. If you look in the Yerushalmi, it's exactly the opposite. HaKesef koneet HaZahav, HaZahav eino koneet HaKesef. And in the Yerushalmi, this perek is not called perek HaZahav, it's called perek HaKesef. So it's opposite. Why is that so? So the opening of our Gemara, we see exactly why that's so. Matani la Rabbi Rebbe le Rabbi Shimon Berei. Rebbe was teaching this Mishnah to his son Rabbi Shimon. Hazahav koneet HaKesef. Gold can acquire silver, as we've just discussed. Amalo Rebbe shanita lanu biyaldutecha HaKesef koneet HaZahav etarzov etishne lanu bezeknutecha HaZahav koneet HaKesef. I remember learning this Mishnah with you when I was at Cheder. I was a young boy, and you taught the opposite way. You taught it the way the Yerushalmi has it. Says the Gemara, biyaldute maisavu v'ziknute maisavu. What was Rebbe's view about money, about kesef, about zahav, about currency when he was young, and how did his view change when he was older? Biyaldute savad havad chashiv havitiva. In the beginning, he thought the principle was that money, since it is chashuv, and I want you to focus on these words, since it is chashuv, it's important, gold, zahav. Since gold is important, it has importance, havitiva. It is the primary currency. Kasma, dilo chashiv havipera, and therefore silver is the commodity which is being bought by the gold. So in this exchange of gold for silver, you've got to decide which is the commodity, which is the payer, and which is the currency, which is the tiva. So because there's chashivus in the gold, Rebbe used to hold that gold was the currency and therefore the kinyan has to be done by lifting up the silver, not the gold, because the gold is the currency. Beziknute sava, when he got older, he changed his mind and he viewed kaspa de charif havitiva, the important element to determine whether something is currency or not, is not its chashivut, but its charifut. Harifut, says Rashi, means yotze behotzav or vele socher. It has liquidity. It is liquid. If you're looking at how to define currency, you've got to look at its liquidity, not its importance. Diamonds might be very important, but they're not as liquid. Gold is very important, but it's not as liquid. Silver is liquid. It's passing hands all the time. And therefore, it is in relationship to gold, we see as the Mishnah goes on, this is relative. It depends on relationship, what to what, gold to silver to copper, and so on. But in the gold-silver relationship, Rebbe changed his view that the important determinant of currency is not its importance, its inherent value, but its effectiveness as a currency in terms of its liquidity. And kesef is more liquid than zahav, and therefore kesef is always the currency, and zahav, gold, then becomes the commodity. The Ritvo explains, remember I've explained to you that there are two Ritvos on Bava Metzia. There's the Ritvo we always had until the 1960s, which was not really the Ritvo. It was called the Ritva. We don't know who it is. I'm not sure who it really is. It's an important Rishon, obviously. We thought it was the Ritva, but it wasn't. And in the 1960s, the actual Ritva was printed. So now we have two Ritvas. In the old Ritva, the Chidushim HaMiyuchasim LeRitva, those that are attributed to the Ritva, but aren't really his, the Ritva says, Shayushtei Girsaot Vitrei Tanoi Alibed Rabbi Meir. There were always two versions of this Mishnah. Two different Tanaim in the name of Rabbi Meir, who's the author of the Mishnah. And what Rebbe changed was which girsa to teach his child. He was teaching his child one girsa when he was young, and then he changed his mind and learnt the other girsa, the other version of the Mishnah, because he believed the important criteria was liquidity, not importance, inherent value, and therefore he believed the second version was the right version. And if you look at Rashi, says the Ritva, you'll see it in Rashi itself, where Rashi uses, says, you see that he adds that word on the next page, implying that it's the way Rebbe learnt the Mishnah. It's not just Rebbe giving his philosophy of economics and trade. It's Rebbe actually understanding the wording of the Mishnah, two versions, preferring one version as in his youth because he thought inherent value was what was important, and the other version later on because he realized liquidity was what was important. This idea of liquidity versus inherent value is an important concept altogether, because what we learn over here is that chashivut and charifut are two different ways of valuing currency, and I would suggest also two different ways of valuing people, valuing everything. There's inherent value, and there's the value of impact, the utilitarian value. How useful is the value? One has to see both of them. So, for example, when it comes to people, there are people who are valued because of what they do, what they accomplish, what they achieve. But sometimes it's not that. Sometimes just the inherent value of a person. Reb Baruch Israchi passed away, a big Gadol b'Yisrael, one of the great Rosh Yeshivas of our time, passed away only 6 months ago, told me a story about my father that my father never told me. I never heard it from my father. I heard it from Reb Baruch Israchi when I took my son to meet him a few years ago. We went to meet him, and he was very appreciative of the fact that I'd taken my son to meet him, and he told us the story. He said he was at an Aguda convention, and he met my father for the first time at the Aguda convention. And he introduced my father at the Aguda convention and told the following story. Said Reb Baruch Israchi, my maternal grandfather was a Rav in Oudtshoorn, South Africa. Oudtshoorn was a little town in South Africa. And Reb Baruch Israchi's maternal grandfather was Reb Baruch Shlom, who was a Talmud of Slabodka. He came from Slabodka to Oudtshoorn. Can you imagine what that could have been like? I can only imagine that Reb Baruch Shlom was not a very effective rabbi in Oudtshoorn. I can just imagine. There were important Talmidei Chachomim in Oudtshoorn at that time, and I'm sure that he was wonderful for them. But for young South African boys growing up or girls growing up in South Africa in the early 20th century, I can't imagine Reb Baruch Shlom had a way of even communicating with them. And yet, Reb Baruch Israchi says that my grandmother used to take my father every Rosh Chodesh to Oudtshoorn. Now, to go from Port Elizabeth to Oudtshoorn, they lived in Port Elizabeth to Oudtshoorn, it's not very far, but it's over a treacherous pass. And in those days, I can only imagine how dangerous that was, how difficult that was, what mode of transport they had. Every Rosh Chodesh, she would take my father to Reb Baruch Shalom and would tell him, I just want you to know what a great Rav looks like. I just want you to know that. And every Rosh Chodesh would just take it to see Reb Baruch Shalom. I'm sure they couldn't communicate. And Reb Baruch Israchi told the story. And I say to myself, so maybe Reb Baruch Shalom didn't have much impact in Oudtshoorn. I don't know. Never heard of him in South Africa. First time I heard his name was from Reb Baruch Israchi in Yerushalayim a few years ago. But maybe I'm here because of that. Maybe my father decided to go and learn with his great uncle, with Reb Yelopian, and then an intelligent yeshiva, because of the impact of that meeting with Reb Baruch Shalom every Rosh Chodesh, and later on with the Ponovezh Rav. You see, sometimes people's value is not by what they do and what they've impacted, and the droshes they give, and the shiurim they give, and the sforim they write. Sometimes it's just who they are. Just who they are. is what's important. The same with money. We use different words for money. There's a zuz. Zuz means there's movement. Currency has to have velocity. Currency needs to move. The word current, there's movement. And there's also the word sela, which is like a rock. Sometimes currency is valuable for its movement. And sometimes, particularly in the old days, gold used to be stored in vaults under the ground. What use did it have? No use. It was just stored. It was inherent value. Value is not always by impact. Value is sometimes by the essence itself. What was Reboruch Shlom, from the Zuz perspective, was he active and did he go and was he makariv people? No, he sat in Otzon and he learned. But his being, his essence, was so valuable. And we need that. We need people who run around in different stages in people's lives. We need people who run around and they do and they're active and they lobby and they teach and they write and they're makariv. And we need people who are just great for who they are. The young Talmidim who came to Kfar Hasidim in Rebbe Lopian's older years, I always used to feel sorry for them because they never heard anything from Rebbe. He was very old, and he just used to come from his little hut where he lived to the Beis HaMedrash for davening, and he used to sit in the Beis HaMedrash a few hours and he would go and rest. They just saw him. They couldn't communicate with him. They never heard from him, but his just being there was such an energy, such a force. That's gold. That's chashivus. Not harifus. It doesn't always have to be harifus. It doesn't always have to be how smart are they. It's just who are they? What is their state of being? One has that also with the difference between a Rebbe and a father. A Rebbe is important to one because of the impact he's had on one's life. Sometimes a father also has enormous impact, but sometimes not. Sometimes when a father just gives birth to somebody, raises a child, and the child goes off and gets educated elsewhere. But that father is, and we see that in the mitzvahs of Kibbud Av as well, and the ties to this time of the year. Our very Gemara here, you'll notice, Matni lo Rebbe le Rabbi Shimon. Rebbe was teaching Rabbi Shimon Berei, his son, this Mishnah, Hazavkun, etc. And then, what happens? Omale, Rabbi Shimon says to his father, Rebbe! Why doesn't he say Abba? Why does he call him Rebbe? From here, from this Gemara, there are more paskins in Simon Reish Membeis in Yoredeh. Aviv Shu Rabo Muvah Koreoto Bidabro Rebbe. If your father is your Rebbe, you call him Rebbe. If he's your Rebbe, Muvhak. We have a Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Aleph in Kiddushin, where the Gemara says Mar was the son of Ravashi. When he used to quote his father, Ravashi, he used to say, Abba Mary, my father, my master. He didn't used to say Rebbe. Didn't call him Rebbe, he called him my father. But we've just seen from our Gemara here, it should be Rebbe. Explains the Ramo, that's Rabo Amuvhak, Avab Rabo Sheinu Muvhak Koreoto Abba. If it's not his, we learned already a little while ago what a Rav Muvhak is, somebody who teaches you most of what you know, gave you your approach to life. If this Rebbe didn't give you your approach to Torah and to life, then he's not Rabo Muvhak, and you can call him father. But if he's Rabo Amuvhak, says the Ramo, you have to call your father Rebbe. And the Vilna Gaon says it's learned from these two Gemaras. Ask the Shach, but we see that's not so. Even people whose fathers are their Rav Muvhak, they call their fathers Abba, not Rebbe. That's what we see. Answers the Shach, beautiful, beautiful Shach. He gives two reasons. The second reason he gives is Mistama ha'av mochel al kvodo bezeh. A father doesn't mind. If the son calls him Abba, he doesn't mind. He's mochel, he forgives it. He's entitled to insist, you should be calling me Rebbe. But he doesn't mind. It's less formal. De ben etzel aviv, afal pi shuhu rabo muvak tzarich haseba, afal gav de talmid tzarabo in tzarich haseba. We see this from Hilchus Seder, from Pesach. The din is that if you're sitting at your Rebbe's table, you're not allowed to lean because you're in front of your Rebbe. You shouldn't be casual. You should be formal when you're in front of your Rebbe. But what happens if you're in front of your father? You also have to be formal with your father. Your father, you're allowed to lean. Mishum de mistoma aviv mochil al kvod rabo. Even if the father is your Rebbe, we paskin, you can still lean at the Seder table. Why? Because the father is mochil. The father doesn't mind. V'hu adin hacha, says the Shach, and the same is here. So that you see clearly that a Rebbe, that although formally one should call one's father, who is one's Rebbe, one should call him Rebbe. But the father doesn't mind. He prefers the intimacy. He's Moichel, and therefore one can call him Abba. And that's why that din applies with Hilchus Haseder. The Rebbe Shani, the Tani Hadamrin, Mimot Moshe Ad Rebbe, Lo Matzino Toru Gdula B'Mokam Echol. What about Rebbe? Why does Rebbe call him Rebbe? He doesn't call him Abba. Why does Rabbi Shimon call Rebbe Rebbe, not Abba? Because Rebbe was also the Nossi. He was not only his Rebbe, he was the Nossi of the whole community, of the whole of Klal Yisrael in Bovel, and therefore he had to treat him on a different level. But for ordinary people, it's not so. Sometimes a person has to be respected because of his impact, because of what he taught you. Sometimes he's respected because of who he is. He's just your father. It doesn't need anything more than that. He's just your father. Sometimes he's both. One needs to know that with Zaydas, with grandfathers. Baruch Hashem, people are living longer and children can grow up and grandchildren can grow up with their Zaydas and great-grandchildren. It's sometimes by the time they have their Zaydas at home, the Zaydas aren't that active. And they don't know their Zaydas from the time they were active. They only see this old man who sits in the chair and plays with them and smiles at them. And they don't appreciate who he was as an active person. But at least to be able to appreciate who he is, the value of growing up around a Zayda. The value of growing up, if there's so much importance placed on the father, even if he's not a Rebbe, a Zayda, just because of his choshuv, he might not be Harif anymore. There might not be the Harifut, but there's the Chashivut. One needs to know, even when we talk about the whole thing of B'nai Torah, there are B'nai Torah who have to go out and do things, and they have to teach, and they have to be Mekarev, and they have to become Rabbonim, and they go into business, they go into the army, they fight our wars, they defend us. These are the Harifim, who we have to respect enormously. But there are also the Chashuvim. There are those who just who are sitting and learning and teaching Torah, and they are chashuvim, even if they're not harifim. And there's an inherent value like gold buried in the vaults under the ground. They hold the value of the whole economy. Although they're not doing anything, it's not going anywhere, that gold. One needs to know that in human beings too, there is harifut. There is the dynamics of movement and impact. And there's also the essential value of who a person is. And one has to be able to see both in a human being. How this person impacts and who this person is.